Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good, and you?
Good. Thank you.
So far, I think it's just you and me.
So far, yes. At least we have two people, right?
Oh, yeah. Do you have a question tonight?
Yeah, I do. Do you?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm very busy. But I'll be glad to hear somebody else's.
I know. I like to do that also.
Yeah.
Because other people ask questions that you kind of have and don't even realize you have the question.
Randall.
Good evening.
Hey, Hannah. Everybody.
Good
hey,
evening.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello.
Ruby.
Hi, Ruby.
Hey, Ruby.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
This burning limousine was one of the enduring images from the protests that sprung up in Washington, D.C.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Does anybody have a question?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chanoch, I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, there are 248 body parts. And there's an energy day for each body part during the year. And I'm wondering about those who have missing body parts and where that energy goes to on those days, or how that energy is directed?
Goes to their body parts in the spiritual level. You don't lose those body parts in the soul.
What is it telling us if we lose it on a physical level?
It depends on the body part. It depends on the action. There's, you can't generalize.
Okay.
To answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Because he's had a knee replacement.
Say again.
If he's had a knee replacement. They've taken bone away. What happens to that? That body part.
The knee represents, well, the word for kneeling is the same as for bending. The root is the same, so it's an indication that you weren't saying 100 blessings a day. And you never did teshuvah. If you were Baal Tshuva, there's still parts of your life that are days in your life when you weren't saying 100 blessings, and you didn't do teshuvah for that. You just became Baal Tshuva without doing teshuvah for those kinds of actions. So you lost the knee as the effect of that. That's just one guess, but again, it depends on the soul. You cannot generalize. You cannot generalize the answer to a health question because it depends on the soul. Depends on the actions. It depends on the previous life. It depends on the actions in this life.
Well, I do. I don't do 100. I have the book. I teach the book. I teach the blessings. I say the blessings for everything that I know, you know, but it's still pretty hard to get 100. But
it's actually very easy to get a blessing, to get 100 blessings. The only day it's not easy is on Shabbat. If you say the morning blessings, that's 18. If you say the Amidah three times a day, that's 3 times 19 is 57, plus the original 18. You're already at 78. Then if you say the Berkat HaMazon twice a day, there's another at 8. You're at 86. And then, let me think. There's another place that. There's blessings. If you say you're the Shacharit prayer, you're saying blessings, you know, leading up to the Shema, and then in the evening leading up to the Shema, and after the Shema. So there's another 2, 4, 6, 8, another 8. So you're up to 92. It's really very easy to get to 100 blessings if you're praying 3 times a day. And you define a prayer as praying as the Amidah. But that's not to say that everyone is expected to do that in this generation. That's why I say it depends on the souls. And I'm not saying somebody who's not saying 100 blessings a day needs to do that. But at the higher levels of consciousness, that is necessary for the level to become a full tzaddik. But again, even in this generation, it's relative to the generation. So because this generation is so weak, and because this generation it appears in the illusion that it's so dark, that there's a lack of light, so that even doing one mitzvah in this generation might be the equivalent of 100 blessings for the generation in the during temple times. So the questions you're asking, if you're looking for a generalized answer, it's a mistake. You have to recognize that everything is relative. Once you recognize everything is relative, then you can get a generalized answer because you know it's not a specific. But it's the problem with students as they develop in their spiritual levels. They're looking for a generalized answer because that's the secular world that Americans live in. Everybody is equal. So if somebody has an issue, they get, as an example, I got cancer of the colon, and I did the work to find out what was the cause of that, and it dealt with Havdalah. So everybody who gets colon cancer, that means it's Havdalah, but the answer is no. It's where in the colon it is. It's many different factors. It's always relative to the soul when you're dealing with it with illnesses. Any other questions? Tana, did you want to talk about the request that you?
Yeah, we just. I thought we'd see if anybody else had questions before I did that.
One last time, does anybody else have a question on any subject?
Hanukkah, I have one more question.
Go ahead.
In your opinion, do you think that this new phrase that has come out, alternative facts, is going to open up a lot of, doors for Kabbalah? Being that there's 70 different meanings to everything and people aren't...
Okay, so one time out. Please do not misquote me. There are 70 different meanings and understandings of every word and every letter in the Torah. There's not 70 meanings for everything. Please do not misquote me. My words are exact, and yes, I sometimes make mistakes. But be very careful with what you say and what you say to others. Now, your question is, this new phrase, alternative facts, and would that open up people to learn Kabbalah? The answer to the question is, why would they learn Kabbalah? Because somebody lies to them. Now, people when they reach a difficult place in their life and they're searching for help, and they reach out to God. Alternative facts does not cause somebody to reach out to God. It's absurd. And it weakens, it is a tool of the negative system because it weakens people's search for truth. How do I know what is truth if there's an alternative fact? But does that mean that you study Kabbalah? It depends on their souls. It's relative to the people. I hope I'm clear.
Thank you, Hano.
Are there any other questions?
I always thought alternative fact meant you were giving the best answer for the information that you had at the time. And I often tell the students, they'll ask a question and I'll say, well, according to this source or this sage or, you know, because there are these different things that we've studied or we've read about. But
the term alternative fact does not apply to the Torah. You're not hearing people who deal with Torah using that term.
Okay.
Alternative fact was coined by Kellyanne Conway as an attempt to explain a statement by one of the Trump people that was an outright lie.
I didn't take it as that. When Sean gave his answer to that specific point, he made the comment that that was what they had at the time, the fact they had at the time. But
That again mm-hmm. is the specific time that it was used by Kellyanne Conway in a public interview on television. She was trying to explain something, and then that didn't work. So then other people, and I don't remember if it was her or other people, pushed this idea that, well, this is the information we had at the time. But actually, that's not true. The information was available. There were pictures taken. And then the clarification ultimately came down that it was being referred to worldwide audiences as opposed to the physical people that were at the inauguration. But again, people clearly, if you make decisions based on the information you have, and sometimes the information you have is false. Sometimes it's the best that you have, and you listen to your intuition, which is really the place that's best capable of knowing those issues and knowing what is the right thing to do at this particular moment in time. Remember, it's the right action at the right place at the right time.
And I guess that statement leads into what I mentioned to you at the last class, and that was Sunday was a busy day for me. Okay, I couldn't make the class because I had company coming for my birthday, and before I knew it, the day was pretty well gone. But several times during the day, I got this thought that I should invite this a friend of mine who's a widow to come and have soup with me because I had made a big pot of lentil soup for Shabbat and I had plenty left. But I was fired from the company. I just didn't feel like having more company. And I dismissed at least the thought two or three times. And yesterday afternoon, I got a phone call from her daughter-in-law that on Sunday afternoon, she had fallen outside and busted her nose, broke her shoulder, crawled from the backyard into her house to call an ambulance and spent the night in the hospital. And I realized that I should have fallen through with those thoughts. And I just wanted
to... So to clarify for people who may not have heard our earlier conversation on the Mini Zohar class, Hana got a thought a few times during the day. Were those thoughts on Sunday?
Yes.
So a few times during Sunday, she got thoughts about this person, the specifics of the lentil soup or anything else. Thoughts come to you for a reason.
Samantha.
And that's what we're the question that Hana is asking is, what does she do now? And earlier, she had indicated that she was feeling badly that she hadn't paid attention to those thoughts. Because had she would have called the person, offered the soup, and the person either would have come over or they would have gone over there. And ultimately, that might have prevented the fall. Or they might have found her in the garden if they had gone over there to deliver the soup. So there's lots of different potentials because it's always relative to the souls and the tikkun of people, the correction of people. So one thing to learn from this lesson is if you make a wrong action, and first off, we never know if it's really wrong, truly wrong from the view of the spiritual levels. But if we feel that we've made a wrong action, do it with joy. Because if you start to feel sad, that's the beginning of depression. That is Satan getting you a second time. You got the thought of this person, but then the next thought that came was, I'm really tired, so I don't have to do it today. That's a thought from Satan. You didn't recognize it as such. So you didn't do what we feel is the right thing to do. Do that with joy. To feel badly, yes, to feel badly is understandable from a human level. But also to realize that to feel badly is coming from Satan, getting you a second time, bringing you even lower spiritually. Not lower, you know, consistently, but for that particular correction, Satan is sending you this thought and getting you a second time, and you need to realize that. Now, I wanted to read, and I will read a story that I read today that really addresses the issue of when do you pay attention, when do you not. It doesn't give it exactly, but the title of the story is On the Road. Before Rabbi Susha of Annapolis was revealed as one of the spiritual giants of the generation, He lived the life of a nomad. He would wander from village to village, from town to town, and nobody knew who he was or could possibly fathom his greatness. One evening when he was sitting in the shul studying the study room of whatever small town he happened to be in then, a woman opened the door, entered, and asked loudly, "Have any of you men seen my husband?" No one knew who she was. It turned out that her husband had abandoned her, and no one knew where he had run off to, or even if he was still alive. His poor wife was now an aguna, unable to claim either D4C or widow status, and therefore forbidden to remarry. Desperate to escape from her aguna status, she decided to travel to as many places as she could in search of her husband. And every city, town, village, and settlement she arrived at, she would ask help in finding her husband, relating physical signs by which he could be identified, but to no avail. And she was becoming frustrated and depressed. At the end of her strength, and her financial resources. However, when Reb Susha heard her unusual request, he jumped up to face her and said, "Go quickly now to the town guest house, and there you will find your husband." The woman neither hesitated nor asked a single question. She darted away to the hospitality center, and there, remarkably, discovered her runaway husband. Those present were amazed. How could this itinerant Susha know the whereabouts of the runaway husband whom he had never met? And their amazement mounted when they soon discovered he had never set foot in the guest house either. "Surely this is a miracle," they concluded, excitedly. And word spread quickly from mouth to mouth to the entire local Jewish population. No, nothing is miraculous here," Susha hastened to disclaim. "It's just that something strange happened at shul this morning. After Shacharit, morning prayer, I overheard two men conversing. And one of them said to the other that a new guest in town had just showed up at the guest house shul. I couldn't help wondering," Susha continued, "what was the significance of my happening to hear this? Why should my ears snatch on to this snippet in the midst of all the other conversations at the same time? I wasn't able to come up with an answer or even a theory. I wanted to spend the day learning Torah. So I had to turn my mind away from this question. Then this evening, after Mariv, evening prayer, for some reason I started thinking about it again. And just then the woman came into the study hall and asked if we had seen her husband. I instantly thought to myself, that's the answer. This man that I heard them talking about must be her husband." Everyone present stared at each other in wonder. "He says this is not a miracle. If so, then it is an indication, a clear sign, even that this stranger Susha must be a tzaddik. Imagine. He is so careful to not pay attention to gossip, so trained himself to tune out even idle conversation, that when his ears catch insignificant words, he feels compelled to search out a deeper meaning for the occurrence. Only such a pure soul would heaven arrange to hear seemingly insignificant words and trust that he would feel compelled to decipher their true significance." the lesson that's consistent and the lesson for Hannah, why would you get three or four thoughts about this woman in the same afternoon? Yes, he's tired. Okay. The Chabad Rebbe had a great answer to that. When people would come to him and he would suggest they do something, a certain mitzvah or a certain task, and their explanation was, I don't have time, I don't have the resources, I'm tired. And his answer was, I'm tired too. But that does not stop me from running to do a mitzvah. I am not saying that Hanukkah was wrong. We all, as we hear the story, think maybe it would have helped this woman, saved this woman. But as a student of Kabbalah, you know this woman has to have this experience. So even if you had gone and stopped her from having this experience that day, she still would have needed to receive the pain and suffering to cleanse her. Or perhaps the fulfillment, the love that is being generated might have caused her to think about what she needed to do teshuvah about. And she would have avoided that particular pain and suffering. Because she wasn't the same person after the teshuvah that she was before. So there's no reason to feel sad. Because it's really her tikkun. She needed to experience that pain. Yes, we need to feel her pain and suffering. We need to recognize that it's not a wonderful thing that happened. It's not. But it's a blessing that she has cleansed so easily. She didn't have to die to cleanse whatever she needed to cleanse, thank God. Understanding the process, looking for the quote-unquote coincidences, questioning why things happen to us, looking for the coincidences, but not just, this is a coincidence, but asking the question, what's the deeper significance? What's the lesson for me? And yes, most of the time you won't have an answer. But that doesn't mean you don't continue to ask the questions. And the most important takeaway from our story, not the story I read, but from Hannah's experience, never allow Satan a second chance. Whatever you do, do it with joy.
So that was a personal conversion. I said badly. What I meant was that I felt her pain because I had had a similar experience a year ago in falling and cracking my knee and my elbow and, was in braces for 2 months. The sadness, it wasn't real sadness. It was identifying with her pain. But what I saw in myself was I forgot the truth that thoughts come from two sources, either Hashem or Satan. And I fell back to thinking that was my thoughts. And because I was tired, I didn't want to have more company that day. And it was just a real eye-opener to remember that where those thoughts come from, and I should have. She might not have come over. I wouldn't have gone over there, but she always comes over, and when I call her, and so that was that was the lesson that I got from it. Now, I will, it is going to cause me some kind of problem because she was the one who would come and help me about every 2 or 3 weeks to mop my floors. And so today, I felt like there had to be, okay, I'm not going to be able to have anybody come and help me do my floors. So that means the middle of the week that I have to do part of my house and another day another part because it's too much for me to do it all in one day, and it's too hard on me when I'm trying to prepare for Shabbat. So today I did part of my house and sweeping and mopping it. And tomorrow I'll do another part. And I felt like that was the lesson. The lesson was for me to pay attention to the thoughts and to now experientially go from just the thought of where is this thought coming from and remembering the incident so it doesn't happen again. And like I say, she could have come over and still gone back home and fallen. I think the lesson for me was pay attention to your thoughts. And I knew it, but again, it's the kind of thing you have to experience so you it wakes you up to say, okay.
Hopefully people don't want to experience it, but normally speaking, yes, people experience these kinds of falling or whatever it is. But as you reach the higher levels of spirituality, you don't have to experience the pain and suffering. You can feel the other's pain without it. And that is the best of all worlds. But it is a good thing that you had this experience. Because there's lessons to be learned, and it's clear you have learned much of those lessons. Now the thing is to always remember those lessons.
Well, when you talk about them like this, it does help.
I understand.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other questions or comments? Thoughts on the subject or a different subject? Everyone, have a beautiful evening. Shalom to all.
Okay, shalom, and thank you. Bye-bye.
Shalom, thank you.